classic podcast for my mother. She read to me when I was little, so now I'm returning the favour and you're welcome to listen along. It's Sunday and that means I'm reading a classic. Thursdays are for offbeat stuff, but whatever I'm reading, it's always great writing. Tonight, I am in the ancient world, 480 BC, at the Hot Gates, Thermopylae. Thermopylae. Hot Gates, the thin passage along the Greek coast, surrounded by high mountains, where King Leonidas and his 300 Spartan warriors held off the vast forces of Persian King Xerxes and Xerxes himself, before ultimately being betrayed and losing their lives as Xerxes crushed them through sheer force of numbers. That's no spoiler, we all know the history. Many of us from the terrific movie 300, starring Gerard Butler as Leonidas.
Madness. This is Sparta!
How is it that we know the incredible story of the Hot Gates and Leonidas and the betrayal and Xerxes? Well, we can thank a Persian citizen, Herodotus, born in about 484 BC in what is now Bodrum, Turkey. Cicero called him the father of history, and modern historians like Tom Holland absolutely adore him. Tonight, I'm going to read you the story of the Hot Gates from our main source, Herodotus. It is great writing from 2,500 years ago. If the ancients had airports and airport bookstores, this story would have been on the wax tablets right at the front to catch everybody's eye. It's that exciting. Before I get to reading a bit about Herodotus, well, as I said, he was born in 484 BC in the Persian Empire to Greek family. The Battle of Thermopylae happened in 480 BC. Herodotus was raised hearing all about that battle because it was fresh in everyone's minds, Greeks and Persians alike. He was devoted to knowledge and he really knew how to write and recite, because the ancients loved reading aloud, just like me and this little podcast. Herodotus had a peer, Thucydides, another historian, but he was more of a just-the-facts-ma'am kind of guy, whereas Herodotus was much more engaging and exciting. Some people called him the father of lies, but that's a bit extreme. It's true that alongside his facts there is an awful lot of imagined language, but it's always engaging expression, and the storyline is factual. It's not really fiction. It's history. You get the gist with Herodotus. In fact, you get the whole picture. That's why he is so beloved, even today. So tonight, let's step back to an ancient time. What was going on in the world? Well, the Romans nearby were busy in their wars with the Etruscans. The south of Italy and Sicily were managed by Greece. Carthage in North Africa was a powerhouse economy, but always fighting over nearby Sicily. The Spartans in the southeast of Greece were the warrior folks who never really got along with the more intellectual Athenians and the rest. And over in Persia, modern-day Iran, Xerxes, son of Darius, decides to lead the second invasion of Greece. Because his father had led the first back in 490 BC, which had failed. Xerxes planned this invasion for 7 years, only to find this hold-up at Thermopylae. Here's how Herodotus wrote about it in Book 7 of his Histories. And just because this is a military tale, do not imagine that it's not a story for everyone, young, old, girls and boys. Just to help you get your bearings, I have abridged it, and I've replaced Hellas with Greeks and Lacedaemonians with Spartans. Makes more sense to us in 2022. I'm reading from a translation by G.C. Macaulay in 1914. Let's begin. Darius, being dead, the kingdom passed to his son Xerxes. Now Xerxes, at the first, was by no means anxious to make a march against Greece, but against Egypt he continued to gather a force. Mardonius, however, was a cousin of Xerxes, ever at his side and having power with him more than any other of the Persians. He kept continually to such discourse as this, which follows. Master, it is not fitting that the Athenians, after having done to the Persians very great evil, should not pay the penalty for that which they have done. What if thou shouldest at this present time do that which thou hast in thy hands to do, and when thou hast tamed the land of Egypt, which has broken out insolently against us, then do thou march an army against Athens, that a good report may be made of thee by men, and that in future, everyone may beware of making expeditions against thy land. Thus far, his speech had to do with vengeance, and to this he would make addition as follows, saying that Europe was a very fair land, and bore all kinds of trees that are cultivated for fruit, and was excellent fertility, and such that the king alone of all mortals was worthy to possess it. So in time he prevailed upon Xerxes, and persuaded him to do this. So when Xerxes had been persuaded to make an expedition against Greece, then in the next year after the death of Darius, he made a march first against those who had revolted. Having subdued these, and having reduced all Egypt to slavery, much greater than it had suffered in the reign of Darius, he entrusted the government of it to Achaemenes, his own brother, another son of Darius. Xerxes then, after the conquest of Egypt, being about to take in hand the expedition against Athens, summoned a chosen assembly of the best men among the Persians, that he might both learn their opinions and himself in the presence of all declare that which he intended to do. And when they were assembled, Xerxes spoke to them, "Wherefore I have assembled you together now, in order that I may communicate to you that which I have in my mind to do. I design to yoke the Hellespont with a bridge, and to march an army through Europe against Greece, in order that I may take vengeance on the Athenians for all the things which they have done, both to the Persians and to my father. You saw how my father Darius also was proposing to make an expedition against these men. But he has ended his life and did not succeed in taking vengeance upon them. I, however, on behalf of him and also of the other Persians, will not cease until I have conquered Athens and burnt it with fire. Seeing that they did wrong unprovoked to me and to my father, first they went to Sardis, and they set fire to the sacred groves and the temples, and then secondly, well, what things they did to us when we disembarked in their land, you all know well, as I think. For these reasons I have resolved to make an expedition against them, and you will please me best if you do this. Whensoever I shall signify to you the time at which you ought to come, you must appear, every one of you, with zeal for the service. And whosoever shall come with a force best equipped, to him I will give gifts such as are accounted in our land to be the most honourable. Thus must these things be done. But that I may not seem to you to be following my own counsel alone, I propose the matter for discussion, bidding any one of you who desires it declare his opinion." Having thus spoken, he ceased. Then Artabanos, being father's brother to Xerxes, and having reliance upon this, spoke as follows, "O king, thou art intending to march against men who are reported to be excellent by both sea and on land. And the thing which is to be feared in this matter, it is right that I should declare to thee. Thou sayest that thou wilt yoke the Hellespont with a bridge and march an army through Europe to Greece. Suppose, however, that you do not succeed in both. Do not thou therefore propose to go into any such danger when there is no need, but do as I say. At the present time, dissolve this assembly. Afterwards, at whatever time it shall seem good to thee, when thou hast considered prudently with thyself, then proclaim that which seems to be best. Artabanos thus spoke, and Xerxes, enraged by it, made answer as follows. Thou art my father's brother, and this shall save thee from receiving any recompense such as thy foolish words deserve. Yet I attach to thee this dishonour, seeing that thou art a coward and spiritless, namely that thou do not march with me against Greece. Remain here together with the women, and I, even without thy help, will accomplish all the things which I said. During 4 full years from the conquest of Egypt, Xerxes was preparing the army and the things that were of service for the army, and in the course of the 5th year he began his campaign with a host of great multitude. For of all the armies of which we have knowledge, this proved by far to be the greatest. For what nation did Xerxes not lead out of Asia against Greece, and what water was not exhausted, being drunk by his host, except only the great rivers? When Xerxes had crossed over into Europe, he gazed upon the army, crossing under the lash, and his army crossed over in 7 days and in 7 nights, going on continuously without pause. Those who served were as follows: the Persians, the Assyrians, the Arabians, the Ethiopians, the Libyans, and many other nations. They all served in the campaign by land, as foot soldiers, and in cavalry. Then, when Xerxes had numbered the army and it had been arranged in divisions, he had a mind to drive through it himself and inspect it, and afterwards he proceeded to do so. And driving through in a chariot by each nation, he inquired about them, and his scribes wrote down the names, until he had gone from end to end, both of the cavalry and of the foot soldiers. Now he sent for Demaratus, who was a Greek, marching with him against Greece. And having called him, he asked as follows: Demaratus, now it is my pleasure to ask thee somewhat which I desire to know. Thou art not only a Greek, but also, as I am informed both by thee and by the other Greeks who come to speak with me, of a city which is neither the least nor the feeblest of Greece. Now, therefore, declare to me this, namely, whether the Greeks will endure to raise their hands against me. When Demaratus heard this, he spoke as follows: O king, I say this, with Greek poverty is ever an inbred growth, while valour is one that has been brought in, being acquired by intelligence and by the force of law. And of it, Greece makes use ever to avert from herself not only poverty, but also servitude to a master. But to the Spartans alone, of these I say, first, that it is not possible that they will ever accept thy terms, which carry with them servitude. And next I say that they will stand against thee in fight, even if all the other Greeks shall be of thy party. And as for numbers, ask now how many there are that they are able to do this, for whether it chances that 1,000 of them have come out onto the field, these will fight with thee. Or if there be less than this, and again if there be more. Xerxes, hearing this, laughed, and said, Demaratus, what a speech is this which thou hast uttered, saying that 1,000 men will fight this vast army? For come, let me examine it by all that is probable. How could 1,000, or 10,000, or even 50,000, at least, if they were all equally free, and were not ruled by one man, stand against so great an army? Since, you know, we shall be more than 1,000 coming about each one of them, supposing them to be in number 5,000. To this Demaratos replied, O king, the Spartans are not inferior to any men when fighting one by one, and they are the best of all men when fighting in a body. For though free, yet they are not free in all things, for over them is set law as a master, whom they fear much more even than thy people fear thee. It is certain at least that they do whatsoever that master commands, and he commands ever the same thing. That is, he bids them not to flee out of battle from any multitude of men, but stay in their post and win the victory or lose their life. He thus made answer, and Xerxes turned the matter to laughter and felt no anger, but dismissed him with kindness. Then, after he had conversed with him, Xerxes marched forth his army through Thrace to invade Greece. And among those who gave Xerxes support from the Greeks, which was demanded, were the following, namely the Thessalians, Dolopians, and Thebans with the rest. Xerxes, however, had not sent to Athens or to Sparta heralds to demand the gift of earth, and for this reason, namely because at the former time, when Darius had sent for this very purpose, the one people threw the men who made the demand into a pit, and the others into a well, and bade them take from thence earth and water and bear them to their king. For this reason, Xerxes did not send men to make this demand. And what evil thing came upon the Athenians for having done this to the heralds, I am not able to say, except indeed that their land and city were laid waste. On the Spartans, however, the wrath fell. They came to Hydarnes. Now Hydarnes was a Persian by race and commander of those who dwelt on the sea coasts of Asia and of the immortals. He offered them hospitality and entertained them, and while they were his guests, he asked them as follows, Spartans, why is it that you flee from becoming friends to the king? For you may see that the king knows how to honour good men when you look at me and at my fortunes. So also you, Spartans, if you gave yourselves to the king, since you have the reputation with him already of being good men, you would have rule each one of you over Greek land by the gift of the king. To this they made answer thus, Hydarnes, thy counsel with regard to us is not equally balanced, for thou givest counsel having made trial indeed of the one thing, but being without experience of the other. Thou knowest well what it is to be a slave, but thou hast never yet made trial of freedom, whether it is pleasant to the taste or no. For if thou should make trial of it, thou would then counsel us to fight for it not only with spears, but also with axes. Now the march of Xerxes' king's army was in name against Athens, but in fact it was going against all Greece. And the Greeks, being informed of this long before, were not all equally affected by it. For some of them, having given earth and water to the Persian, had confidence, supposing that they would suffer no hurt from the barbarian, while others, not having given, were in great terror. Those Greeks who had the better mind about Greece came together in one place and considered their affairs and interchanged assurances with one another. Then, deliberating together, they thought it well first of all things to reconcile the enmities and bring an end to the wars which they had with one another. When they had thus resolved, they reconciled their enmities and then sent first 3 men as spies to Asia. But Xerxes, being informed for what purpose they had come, commanded they be led round and to show them the whole army, both foot and horse, and when they should have had their fill of looking at these things, to let them go unhurt to whatsoever land they desired. The spies then, having thus looked at everything, and after that, having been dismissed, returned back to Europe. When the Greeks heard about Xerxes' army, they deliberated, having regard to that which had been said, where and in what regions they should set the war on foot. And the opinion which prevailed was to guard the pass at Thermopylae, for it was seen to be this pass through which no barbarian should be permitted to go into Greece. The passage into Greece by here, where it is narrowest, is but 50 feet wide. It is not here, however, that the narrowest part of this whole region lies. In front of Thermopylae, and also behind it, is a single wheel track only, and on the west of Thermopylae there is a mountain which is impassable and precipitous, rising up to a great height, while on the east of the road the sea with swampy pools succeeds at once. In the passage there are hot springs, which the natives of the place call the pots, and an altar of Heracles is set up near them. Moreover, a wall had once been built at this pass, and in old times there was a gate set in it. Now the ancient wall had been built long before, and the greater part of it was by that time in ruins from lapse of time. The Greeks, however, resolved to set it up again, and at this spot to repel the barbarian from Greece. The Greeks calculated that the barbarians would not be able to take advantage either of superior numbers or of cavalry, and therefore they resolved here to receive the invader of Greece. And when they were informed that the Persians were in Pieria, they set forth for the campaign, some going to Thermopylae by land and others making for Artemision by sea. For the force which Xerxes led, we must give a probable estimate. 528 myriads of 3,220 was the number of men whom Xerxes, son of Darius, led as far as Thermopylae. That is the number of the whole army, but of the women who made bread for it, and of the concubines and eunuchs, no man can state any exact number. Nor again of the draft animals and other beasts of burden, or of the Indian hounds which accompanied it. King Xerxes was encamped within the region of Trachis, in the land of the Malians, and the Greeks within the pass. This place is called by the Greeks in general Thermopylae, but by the natives of the place and those who dwell in the country round it, it is called Pylae. Both sides then were encamped hereabout, and the one had command of all that lies beyond Trachis in the direction of the north wind, and the others of that which tends towards the south wind, and the midday on this side of the continent. These were the Spartans, who awaited the attack of the Persian in this place. Of the Spartans, 300 hoplites. Of the men of Tegea and Mantinea, 1,000, half from each place. From Orchomenos in Arcadia, 120, and from the rest of Arcadia, 1,000. From Corinth, 400, from Phlius, 200, and the men of Mycene, 80. These were they who came from the Peloponnese, and from the Boeotians, 700 of the Thespians, and of the Thebans, 400. Of these troops, although there were other commanders, also according to the state to which each belonged, yet he who was most held in regard, and who was leader of the whole army, was the Spartan, Leonidas, who had obtained the kingdom of Sparta contrary to expectation. For as he had two brothers, each older than himself, he had been far removed from the thought of becoming king. Since, however, one had died without male child, and the other was then no longer alive, thus the kingdom came to Leonidas. He then, at this time, went to Thermopylae, having chosen the 300 who were appointed by law. And he took with him besides, before he arrived, those Thebans. Leonidas was anxious to take up these with him of all the Greeks, namely because accusations had been strongly brought against them that they were taking the side of the Persians. Therefore he summoned them to the war, desiring to know whether they would send troops with them or whether they would openly renounce the alliance of the Greeks. And they sent men, having other thoughts in their mind all the while. These, with Leonidas, the Spartans had sent out first, in order that seeing them, the other allies might join in the campaign, and for fear that they also might take the side of the Persians if they heard that the Spartans were putting off their action. Afterwards, however, since they did not suppose that the fighting in Thermopylae would soon be decided, the Thebans sent only the forerunners of their force. These, I say, had intended to do thus. And meanwhile the Greeks at Thermopylae, when the Persians had come near to the pass, were in dread and deliberated about making retreat from their position. To the rest of the Peloponnesians then it seemed best that they should go, but Leonidas gave his vote for remaining there, and for sending at the same time messengers to the several states bidding them to come up to help them, since they were but few to repel the army of the Persians. As they were thus deliberating, Xerxes sent a scout on horseback to see how many the Greeks were in number and what they were doing. For he had heard, while he was yet in Thessaly, that there had been assembled in this place a small force, and that the leaders of it were Spartan under Leonidas. And when the horsemen had ridden up towards their camp, he looked upon them and had a view not indeed of the whole of their army, for of those which were posted within the wall, which they had repaired and were keeping a guard, it was not possible to have a view, but he observed those who were outside, whose station was in front of the wall, and it chanced at that time that the Spartans were they who were posted outside. So then he saw some of the men practicing athletic exercises, and some combing their long hair. And as he looked upon these things, he marvelled, and at the same time he observed their number. And when he observed all exactly, he rode back, unmolested, for no one attempted to pursue him, and he found himself treated with much indifference. And when he returned, he reported to Xerxes all that which he had seen. Hearing this, Xerxes was not able to conjecture the truth about the matter, namely, that they were preparing themselves to die, and to deal death to the enemy so far as they might. But it seemed to him that they were acting in a manner merely ridiculous, and therefore he sent for Demaratos, desiring to discover what this was which the Spartans were doing. And he said, "Thou did hear from my mouth at a former time, when we were setting forth to go against Greece, the things concerning these men, and having heard them, thou madest me an object of laughter, because I told thee of these things which I perceived would come to pass. But for me it is the greatest of all ends to speak the truth continually before thee, O king. Hear then now also. These men have come to fight with us for the passage, and this is it that they are preparing to do, for they have a custom which is as follows. Whenever they are about to put their lives in peril, then they attend to the arrangement of their hair. Be assured, however, that if thou shalt subdue these and the rest of them which remain behind in Sparta, there is no other race of men which will await thy onset. O king, all will raise hands against thee. For now thou art about to fight the noblest kingdom and city of those which are among the Greeks, and the best men." To Xerxes, that which was said seemed to be utterly incredible, and he asked again a second time in what manner, being so few, they would fight with his host. He said, "O king, deal with me as with a liar if thou find not that these things come to pass as I say." Thus saying, he did not convince Xerxes, who let 4 days go by, expecting always that they would take to flight. But on the 5th day, when they did not depart but remained, being obstinate, as he thought, in impudence and folly, he was enraged and sent against them the Medes and the Kissians, charging them to take the men alive and bring them into his presence. Then, when the Medes moved forward and attacked the Greeks, there fell many of them, and others kept coming up continually, and they were not driven back, though suffering great loss. And they made it evident to every man and to the king himself, not least of all, that human beings are many, but men are few. This combat went on throughout the day. And when the Medes were being roughly handled, then these retired from the battle, and the Persians, those namely whom the king called immortals, took their place and came to the attack, supposing that they at least would easily overcome the enemy. When, however, these also engaged in combat with the Greeks, they gained no more success than the Median troops, but the same as they, seeing that they were fighting in a place with a narrow passage, using shorter spears than the Greeks, and not being able to take advantage of their superior numbers. The Spartans, meanwhile, were fighting in a memorable fashion, and besides other things of which they made display, being men perfectly skilled in fighting opposed to men who were unskilled, they would turn their backs to the enemy and make a pretense of taking to flight. And the barbarians, seeing them thus taking a flight, would follow after them with shouting and clashing of arms. Then the Spartans, when they were being caught up, turned and faced the barbarians. And thus turning round, they would slay innumerable multitudes of the Persians. And there fell also at these times a few of the Spartans themselves. So, as the Persians were not able to obtain any success by making trial of the entrance and attacking it by divisions and every way, they retired back. And during these onsets, it is said that the king, looking on, three times leapt up from his seat, struck with fear for his army. Thus they contended then, and on the following day, the barbarians strove with no better success, for because the men opposed to them were few in number, they engaged in battle with the expectation that they would be found to be disabled and would not be capable any longer of raising their hands against them in fight. The Greeks, however, were ordered by companies as well as by nations, and they fought successively each in turn, excepting the Phocians, for these were posted up on the mountain to guard the sole path through. So the Persians, finding nothing different from that which they had seen on the former day, retired back from the fight. Then, when the king was in a strait as to what he should do in the matter, before him Ephialtes, a Malian, came to him to speak, supposing that he would win a very great reward from the king. And this man told him of the path which leads over the mountain to Thermopylae, and brought about the destruction of those Greeks who remained in that place. Afterwards, from fear of the Spartans, he fled to Thessaly, and when he had fled, a price was proclaimed for his life. Then, some time afterwards, having returned, he was slain by a man of Trachis. Now this man killed Ephialtes for another cause, which I shall set forth in the following part of the history, but he was honoured for it nonetheless by the Spartans. Thus Ephialtes, after these events, was slain. Xerxes, accordingly, being pleased by that which Ephialtes engaged to accomplish, at once with great joy proceeded to send his immortals, and they set forth from the camp about the time when the lamps are lit. By this path the Persians proceeded all through the night, and when dawn appeared, they had reached the summit of the mountain. In this part of the mountain there were, as I have before shown, 1,000 hoplites of the Phocians, keeping guard, to protect their own country and to keep the path. For while the pass below was guarded by those whom I have mentioned, the path over the mountain was guarded by the Phocians, who had undertaken the business for Leonidas by their own offer. While the Persians were ascending, they were concealed from these, since all the mountain was covered with oak trees, and the Phocians became aware of them after they had made the ascent, as follows. The day was calm, and not a little noise was made by the Persians, as was likely when leaves are lying spread on the ground under their feet, upon which the Phocians started up and began to put on their arms. And by this time the barbarians were close upon them. These, when they saw men arming themselves, fell into wonder, for they were not expecting that anyone would appear to oppose them, and instead of that, they had met with an armed force. Then the immortals, seized with fear lest the Phocians should be Spartans, asked Ephialtes of what people the force was, and being accurately informed, he set the Persians in order for battle. The Phocians, however, when they were hit by the arrows of the enemy, which flew thickly, fled and got away at once to the topmost peak of the mountain, fully assured that it was against them that the enemy had designed to come, and here they were ready to meet death. These, I say, were in this mind. But the Persians, meanwhile, with Ephialtes and the immortals, made no account of the Phocians, but descended the mountain with all speed. To the Greeks who were in Thermopylae, the soothsayer, Megistius, declared the death which was to come to them at dawn of day. And afterwards deserters brought the report of the Persians having gone round. These signified it to them while it was yet night, and thirdly came the day watchers, who had run down from the heights when day was already dawning. Then the Greeks deliberated, and their opinions were divided, for some urged that they should not desert their post, while others opposed this counsel. After this they departed from their assembly, and some went away and dispersed each to their several cities, while others of them were ready to remain there, together with Leonidas. However, it is reported also that Leonidas himself sent them away, having a care that they might not perish, but thinking that it was not seemly for himself and for the Spartans who were present to leave the post to which they had come at first to keep guard there. I am inclined rather to be of this latter opinion, namely that because Leonidas perceived that the allies were out of heart and did not desire to face the danger with him to the end, he ordered them to depart, but held that for himself to go away was not honourable, whereas if he remained, a great fame of him would be left behind, and the prosperity of Sparta would not be blotted out. The allies then, who were dismissed, departed and went away, obeying the word of Leonidas, and only the Spartans, Thespians, and the Thebans remained behind. Of these the Thebans stayed against their will, and not because they desired it, for Leonidas kept them, counting them as hostages. But the Thespians very willingly, for they said that they would not depart and not leave Leonidas and those with him. And they stayed behind and died with them. Xerxes, meanwhile, having made libations at sunrise, stayed for some time, until about the hour when the market fills, and then made an advance upon them. For thus it had been enjoined by Ephialtes, seeing that the descent of the mountain is shorter, and the space to be passed over much less than the going round and the ascent. The barbarians accordingly with Xerxes were advancing to the attack, and the Greeks with Leonidas, feeling that they were going forth to death, now advanced out much further than at first. Now they engaged with them outside the narrows, and very many of the barbarians fell, for behind them the leaders of the divisions, with scourges in their hands, were striking each man, ever urging them on to the front. Many of them were driven into the sea and perished, and many more still were trodden down while yet alive by one another, and there was no reckoning of the number that perished. For knowing the death which was about to come upon them, by reason of those who were going round the mountain, they displayed upon the barbarians all the strength which they had, to its greatest extent, disregarding danger and acting as if possessed by a spirit of recklessness. Now by this time the spears of the greater number of them were broken, and they were slaying the Persians with their swords, and in this fighting fell Leonidas, having proved himself a very good man, and others also of the Spartans with him, men of note. Moreover, of the Persians there fell here, besides many others of note, especially two sons of Darius. Two brothers of Xerxes, I say, fell here fighting, and meanwhile over the body of Leonidas there arose a great struggle between the Persians and the Spartans, until the Greeks by valour dragged this away from the enemy and turned their opponents to flight four times. This conflict continued until those who had gone with Epialtes came up, and when the Greeks learnt that these had come, from that moment the nature of the combat was changed, for they retired backwards to the narrow part of the way, and having passed by the wall, they went and placed themselves upon the hillock, all in a body together, except only the Thebans. Now this hillock is in the entrance, where now the stone lion is placed for Leonidas. On this spot, while defending themselves with daggers, that is, those who still had them left, and also with hands and with teeth, they were overwhelmed by the missiles of the barbarians. Some of these having followed directly after them and destroyed the fence of the wall, while others had come round and stood about them on all sides. The men were buried where they fell, and for these, as well as for those who were slain before being sent away by Leonidas, there is an inscription which runs thus: "Here once, facing in fight 300 myriads of foemen, thousands four did contend, men of the Peloponnese." This is the inscription for the whole body, and for the Spartans separately there is this: "Stranger, report this word, we pray, to the Spartans, that lying here in this spot we remain, faithfully keeping their laws." Thus did the Greeks at Thermopylae contend in fight. And Xerxes summoned Demaratos and inquired of him, having first said this: "Demaratos, thou art a good man, and this I conclude by the truth of thy words, for all that thou said turned out so as thou didst say. Now, however, tell me, how many in number are the remaining Spartans? And of them, how many are like these in matters of war, or are they so, even all of them?" He said, "O king, the number of all the Spartans is great, and their cities are many, but that which thou desirest to learn, thou shalt know. There is the city of Sparta, having about 8,000 men, and these are all equal to those who fought here. The other Spartans are not equal to these, but they are good men too." To this Xerxes said, "Demaratos, in what manner shall we, with least labour, get the better of these men? Come, set forth to us this, for thou knowest the courses of their councils, seeing that thou were once their king." He made answer, "O king, if thou dost in very earnest take counsel with me, it's right that I declare to thee the best thing. While they have a war of their own close at their doors, there will be no fear for thee from them that when the remainder of Greece is being conquered by the land army, they will come to the rescue there. Then, after the remainder of Greece has been reduced to subjection, from that moment the Spartan power will be left alone, and therefore feeble." After him spoke Achaemenes, brother of Xerxes. "O king," he said, "do not consider the affairs of the enemy, either where they will set on foot the war, or what they will do, or how many in number they are. For it is sufficient that they should themselves take thought for themselves, and we for ourselves likewise. And if the Spartans come to stand against the Persians in fight, they will assuredly not heal the wound from which they are now suffering." To him Xerxes made an answer, "Achaemenes, I think that thou speakest well, and so will I do. But Demaratos speaks that which he believes to be best for me, though his opinion is defeated by thine." Having said thus, Xerxes passed in review of the bodies of the dead. And as for Leonidas, hearing that he had been the king and commander of the Spartans, he bade them cut off his head and crucify him. And it has been made plain to me by many proofs besides, but by none more strongly than by this, that King Xerxes was enraged with Leonidas while alive more than any other man on earth. For otherwise he would never have done this outrage to his corpse. since of all the men whom I know, the Persians are accustomed most to honour those who are good men in war. They then, to whom it was appointed to do these things, proceeded to do so. And that's where we'll leave it tonight. An abridged version of the original story of the Battle of Thermopylae. And I've really only read you a part. I have had to leave out all the stuff about the oracles, but that is an excellent part of the story as well. If you ever get the chance to read some Herodotus histories, please do so. His writing style was absolutely terrific, and there are many translations to choose from. I hope you enjoyed my read of this rollicking history. And I believe it's the first time that I've visited Greek history on this podcast, so I'm very happy to finally get there. Fabulous stories, fabulous writing. There is a lot to enjoy. And speaking of lots, that's your lot. I'll be back on Thursday, 9 p.m. Sydney time, with something offbeat. And I wish you all a great and safe week wherever you are. But before I go, I want to say velkommen to new listeners across Denmark. It's great to have you on board as part of the Nudie Reads crew. I'm so pleased you're here because that means Nudie Reads now has a full house of audiences across the entire European Union. How good is that? Mille grazie to every single listener in Europe and everywhere else. You all make this little pod so worthwhile. I really appreciate that you spend time with me. So till next time, take care. It really is slippery out there. And thanks for listening to Nudie Reads.